Our scripture this morning is found in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13. The gifts he gave were that some would be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ until all of us come to unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to maturity, to measure of the full stature of Christ. Recently, as we gathered a couple of weeks ago, we talked about holy obedience. I've been looking at Thomas Kelly's The Testament of Devotion and adding in my own experience to that and thinking about how it is that we live out this life with Christ. And he talks about holy obedience and how it comes out of living in relationship with God. So during the service a couple of weeks ago, I shared my story of how I realized that God really did love me and how getting that God loved me no matter what, all the time, every day, no matter who I was, what I did, or anything, that God loved me made all the difference in the world. That and understanding that I am enough, that I don't have to do something or be something special or act in a different way, but I am enough to live out faithfully everything that God is calling me to do. In that, I challenge you to write out your own God story and how it is that God has unfolded in your life. And Philip posted on his blog his God story, and I was grateful to read that and to be able to understand more of his God story and how God has unfolded in him. And I would continue to challenge the rest of you to think about writing out your God story. How has God been real in your life? And I would love to read those. This is an important foundation for holy obedience and what it means to be holy and obedient. Rufus Jones and Paul Anderson write that rather than seeing George Fox as a prophetic voice that speaks out against societal ills and injustice, or as a charismatic challenger of institutionalized religion, or as a visionary who had special access to divine leadings, that we really need to see the ministry of George Fox as growing out of the transforming encounter with the power and presence of God. That as he had this encounter with the living Christ, that's how he lived it out. And all of these other things that he did really grew out of that life-changing encounter with Christ, which changed everything for him personally on the inside, for how he lived out his walk with God, for what he did, for the things that God called him to do. It changed everything. And the invitation that is true for all of us, that as we encounter the living Christ and as we journey with God, and that looks different for every one of us, but as we take that journey, that out of that journey come amazing things as we live out faithfully what it means to follow Christ. Thomas Kelly suggests that one may enter into holy obedience through a profound mystical experience, in which we have that kind of profound mystical experience that unfolds for us in ways that are hard to even articulate sometimes because they're so personal and so mystical and so real to us that we don't even know how to put words around it sometimes. He also says that for many, we really struggle, like Jacob in the Old Testament, who wrestled with God all night. And our holy obedience is born out of that struggle, that deep struggle, as we wrestle together to learn what this means and how is it that I'm to be faithful. But Kelly suggests that for everyone, the way is to simply begin now to obey the leadings as they come to you. To live in this present moment, right now, this very moment, and to open yourself up to God and relax. I love that part, that we get to relax. Not, we sometimes have a lot of angst around how can I do this and do it right, and what am I supposed to be hearing, and what's all. But to simply open ourselves and then relax and wait and allow God to speak and trust that God is speaking and that what we hear, that we can know that it is God's voice. So live in this present moment and obey what comes. That's pretty simple. And yet we sometimes make it a lot more difficult. In his book, Let Your Life Speak, Parker Palmer talks about the Quaker phrase that is the title of the book, Let Your Life Speak. And as Jan said last week, sometimes we've reduced that to don't use words, simply let your life speak. And that we just go quiet and quietly go about doing that which God calls us to do. Parker Palmer talks about how he really understood it as a mandate to make his life count, to pattern his life after those heroes of the faith, like Martin Luther King and others that were important heroes for him, and that he needed to kind of pattern his life after that and make sure that his life counted for God in some particular way. But he said he really came to see that it meant that he was allow the life that was in him to speak. That every person has a voice that is meant to speak out. And that he needed to allow that to be given voice, to be shared in overt kinds of ways. He talks about young children having a unique voice, and that you can even notice it in a young child. And it would be interesting to think what John and Jessica have noticed in Lucy that's unique about Lucy, not just every child, but how is Lucy's voice even now? What is she, three? At 3 years old, that her voice is beginning to be uniquely Lucy's, and that God is speaking through her in unique ways that fit her personality. And that we can see that, and we can notice it, and that we can nurture it. We can call it forth. Rather than trying to shape Lucy into some image of who we think Lucy ought to be, that we nurture what is in Lucy and call it forth. The God that is in Lucy is real, and we call that expression of God forth. And that's the same thing for all of us. There's a unique voice in every one of us, and we call it forth to speak. I saw Dick Hendricks yesterday, and he said that he's calling himself a unique antique. But he said that we're really all unique antiques and that we all have a unique voice that we need to speak forth. I'm going to give just an aside because I forgot to do it earlier, and that is that Dick is a patriarch among us. He's 107 years old and has now moved to Oregon and is living in assisted living, but he is wearing out. And they have now placed him on hospice. They think he probably has about 6 months to live. And he says he's ready. He's ready to go. He is tired. He's exhausted. And just the effort of living is effort. And so he doesn't have much energy. He said, I'm not really up for visitors that aren't family. But he's really wanting family to come and to be with him and to be able to have these opportunities to speak with him. And I get included in that. Isn't that fun? So I will try to bring back news from that as we do. And I meant to share that a bit earlier and completely forgot. So, you know, when the opportunity comes to mind, that's the time to do it. But he really stressed that he was a unique person and that we all are. He says, it's not just me that's a unique antique. And obviously we laugh to add on antique to someone that's 107 and still so sharp and clear of mind and realizing that he still has purpose and place in this earth, even at 107. And yet his reminder to me that we're all unique, and to live that out, to be faithful. Allowing your unique voice to come forth is to find your calling, to find your purpose. You know, the truth is that we can't do every good idea. Good ideas come all the time, and there's more than I can keep up with. You all share ideas with me that are more than I can do, and we all have ideas that are come that are more than I can do or you can do. And yet finding what is it that is mine to do? What is it that is yours to do? What is it that is our collective task to do? That's an important thing, an important process of discernment and listening and following. God doesn't ask us to do every good idea. That's a human reaction, a human assumption that we must do it all. And yet to understand what it is that God is asking us to do. Frederick Buechner says, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." Again, it's not just meeting the need that we're called to be about, but it's doing it in a way that gives us deep gladness. The thing that we're uniquely called to fits us. It fits us well, and it's something that we have delight in doing. We have energy to do that. We want to do that. We're pulled to do this one thing because it's important. And where those meet the world's need are really critical places that we can attend to, that we must attend to. So pay attention to what gives you great joy. What gives you great joy? What do you find that you have energy for, that you want to be about? And pay attention to that, because that's a part of your calling, an important part of your calling. Many of us that grew up in church where there was a lot of emphasis on what you're supposed to do, heard that we were often called to do the thing that we feared the most. If we didn't want to do it, that's what God was going to call us to do. And I think the only way that God calls us to do the thing that we feared the most is when there's some kind of transformation experience in which we have totally changed our heart and we want to do that thing. Because God doesn't call us to the places that we don't want to go. That everything in us says, no, that's not me, I can't do that. It's only as we come out of a changed and transformed encounter that everything about that whole thing changes. And so what is it that gives you joy? And how is it that you can leave it out? Donna's shaking her head or nodding her head. Because the thing that gives her joy is to travel. To travel, and not just travel. She loves to travel and go see sights. And she and Chris do that all the time. But the thing that is her calling is to go and do ministry in other locations and meet needs in places where people don't have enough. And to be able to take glasses to people that don't have access to glasses, and they can now sew well because they have reading glasses so that they can see, or to be able to share in many, many other kinds of ways that she has gone. It matches her unique joy. And that's one of the ways that she lives out this gift of mercy that she has, this compassion to go and help and do things for other people. And we could go around and all share, but it's those places where we have kind of deep joy and deep compulsion to go and do something that the world needs. David and Karen Maines tell the story of the struggling juggler that was really a clown. And he struggles to stifle the clown in him because he wants to be a part of the troupe and be able to choreograph so that everybody does everything in unison. And he struggles with that because he keeps wanting to flip out of the routine and do his own thing, and discovers that clowns are unique, and that as he follows what he was uniquely made to be, he's actually more gifted at that. And shines and does well. And that's how he can live out his calling. It's just a little thing, but it matters that we follow that we were created to do and to be. Early Quakers taught us that there's really no limit to what we can do. Early Quakers did astounding things. They went and spoke to powerful people in powerful places. Little timid Quakers that you would think would have no business doing this made a huge difference and went and lived out their leadings. They transformed the world around them as they were faithful to be obedient. And there was not a sense of, well, you can't really do that because, you know, you're not powerful enough. You don't have any position that gives you authority to do that or to go speak to this person. They simply said, that's mine to do. I must go. And so they went. They weren't limited by what is reasonable. I love that. Not limited by what's reasonable. That's, you know, we say, well, that's not possible. Or, it's not a reasonable thing for me to be doing. That if it's God's calling, God's nudge, that we're faithful to go and say, yes. Now, we may say, how can I do this? And start dialoguing with other people and say, this doesn't make sense. This seems kind of outlandish and way out there. But that's a part of the journey of discovering how it is that that can be lived out and fleshed out. Because outlandish things were accomplished as they were faithful to follow their leadings. For me, I really thought that God would show me the career path that I was to be on and that I was to change. I knew that there was to be a change from working in the labs and doing blood tests. And I thought that God would show me a new career path as I walked with God and then I could get on with that career path. But to my surprise, my instructions were not about what to do in the future. Rather, I was to simply walk with God step by step, day by day. And that God would lead me. Now, it's true that out of that, ultimately, I became a pastor. But that wasn't my primary call. It was simply to walk with God day by day, step by step, and to lean in to the leadings as they came. When God called Moses, he had a list of qualifications that he said he didn't measure up for. There's no way I can do this. I don't have the qualifications to lead the people out of Egypt. That's not me. But God said those qualifications aren't important. Instead, God said, what's in your hand? And he said, well, my staff. And it was the staff that God used. It was an invitation to trust God, that God would use him and that God would lead him. God told Abram to leave and go to a land where I will show you, some new place. Jesus said, follow me. Follow me, and I will lead you. He also said, my sheep can know my voice. They hear me and they know my voice. Most of us don't relate to being sheep, but we relate to being children and knowing that children know the voice of their parents. And we know the voice of God. If we will pause and listen, we know when God speaks. And we can hear the difference between the clamoring of the world and God's still small voice that speaks directly and personally. Frank Tillipas said, for God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven, we need an army of moms, backpackers, and artists serving with the same sense of calling as possessed by the clergy. So for God's work to be done on earth, it isn't all up to me, or those of us that are recorded ministers, or those of us that have a particular position. We need an army of moms, backpackers, and artists serving with the same sense of calling in order for God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. That means we all have to be faithful in whatever way that works. George Fox said, the power of the Lord is over all, and that was his most frequent phrase. I didn't realize that until I read that. Somebody did a study and discovered that that was his most frequent phrase. But it is true. We live in the power of the Lord. And we're able to go forth in the power of the Lord. Early Quakers got our name because we trembled in the power of the Lord. And we sometimes forget that it's still true, that this same power of the Lord is over every one of us, and that we're invited to live into that, to allow the power of the Lord to be in us. Fox also said to dwell in the sweet, holy power of God. I love that. To dwell in the sweet, holy power of God. Ministry and how we do ministry and live out ministry is really our collective face to the world. It isn't our building, and it isn't this thing that we call church. Rather, it's us being God's faithful people everywhere, out there, somewhere. Every one of us being God's faithful ministers out there as ministers of North Seattle Friends Church. Not just me, but every single one of us being faithful as ministers out there, doing that which God nudges each one of us uniquely to do, is our collective face to the world. And our work as a church is to notice, liberate, and empower each other to live into the ministry callings, to name the gifts, to name the callings, the leadings, and the ministries that rise among us, to notice, to pay attention, to call forth, to nudge each other. Have you thought about? You know, I think you might be a good person to join me. I want to do this, and I need somebody to do it with me. And it seems like this would be match your heart, and you would be good at this. Will you join me? To notice and pay attention to each other and call forth that which God is doing among us. And as we go, we accompany each other. I'm not going to get further into that because that's really next week's message as we think about being a blessed community together. But we do. We accompany one another in doing these ministries. Those of us gathered as North Seattle Friends Church have a unique set of gifts and callings. And as we live in holy obedience, we live out these callings. They are both everyday acts of goodness and big deal callings to change the world. But these callings are uniquely ours to do. And uniquely the way that God lives in us as individuals gathered together in this community called North Seattle Friends Church. Let us be faithful to follow the nudges, to live into the callings, to be the people of God known as Quakers in this place at North Seattle Friends Church, living out what it means to be faithful and following our leadings. Let us wait in a time of listening, a time of silence, a time of quiet worship, as we allow God to speak directly to us in the silence, and then to be faithful to share the message that comes with each other, to invite Philip to come with a microphone so that we can share that message that God gives with each other, because we want to hear everything that God is saying in our midst today, every message that God has for us as a community. Let us wait, let us listen, and let us be faithful.